First, I got to remind people that is the PGA National Resort and Spa Inside the Ropes segment, as we do each and every week, taking a look at a handful of hot topics in the world of golf. And it's brought to you by PGA National Resort and Spa. Challenge yourself on a course that has hosted the Ryder Cup, the PGA Championship, and now the Honda Classic. Come and play at PGA National Resort and Spa. Visit PGAResort.com.
All right, Russ, number two to you.
Sorry to rudely interrupt you there, Pat.
No, that's fine. I'm used to it. I'm used to it. Not by you, by my wife, mainly. All right, Russ, number two goes to you. There's been a lot of talk, a lot of changes to the to Augusta National over the last 6-7 years. Some in response to Tiger just dominating in '97 like he did, but mainly in conjunction with the advances in technology, making the course longer, bringing some rough in, doing some things with the greens, just trying to make it more major worthy. They didn't want guys shooting 20 under or 19 under like Tiger did a few years ago. They want to keep this course within the single digits. Last year, we had a situation where Zach Johnson, as we mentioned earlier in the show, won with a plus one total, highest winning total in some 40 years here at Augusta. The talk now from a lot of the players is this is like a U.S. Open course. It's playing like a U.S. Open. Has the Masters succeeded the U.S. Open in terms of toughness?
Good question, Patrick. And I know you're a U.S. Open guy. I'm a Masters guy. So this is always a good discussion for us because we differ on which major we think is the most prestigious. I think the sky's falling cries from Masters fans last year that it was becoming a U.S. Open were a little premature. I think this year's leaderboard through three rounds is good proof of that. Trevor Immelman's at 11 under par. Brant Snedeker's at minus 9. Flesh is at 8. Casey's at 7. Tiger's at minus 5. Sink is at minus 4. You've got a half dozen players at 4 under or better. Then you've got 7 more guys at 2 under par. So I think this year's leaderboard is a good example of why last year might have been kind of an isolated incident. We realized the weather last year was a big reason for that. Cold temperatures in the high 50s and mid 60s, wind, you know, every day of 15, 20 miles an hour. The course was hard and fast, and therefore the greens were almost impossible to hold. Well, this year you get a little bit of rain early on in the week, and all of a sudden you got guys shooting 68 and 67 over the weekend. So I don't think that it has replaced the U.S. Open as the toughest test of golf. I think the U.S. Open still holds that distinction as the toughest and most complete test of golf. And when I say complete, that also means that I think that the Masters does actually cater a little bit to strengths of longer hitters. I think that the U.S. Open, out of all four majors, is the one that any player that week that's playing well on all facets of his game, driving, iron play, chipping and sand play and putting, can win the U.S. Open. I don't know that I necessarily believe that at the Masters, and that's a distinction that the U.S. Open has, that it's, I think it's the most complete test of golf as well as being the most difficult, not the Masters, although I still think the Masters is the most prestigious of all four majors.
Well, you know, we disagree on that one, but I will say this. I do agree with you on the concept that the U.S. Open is still the toughest, and here's the main reason why. I think because the U.S. Open is only played on one course every 10, 12, 15 years, that these players that play the Masters can adjust to it because it's every year at Augusta, and the good players, the players that are playing at Augusta all the time, will figure out a way how to play it. When you go to play Oakmont or you play Wingfoot or you play Torrey Pines and you only play there, you know, as a player under U.S. Open conditions once every 10 to 15 to 20 years, you don't have enough muscle memory based on your past experiences with that course to try and figure them out. You can only do so much with length and rough and speed of greens, but I think when the U.S. Open goes to different venues and is able to do all those things to those courses, it just presents a set of circumstances mentally almost more than physically on players that they're not able to adjust in 3 or 4 days or however many practice rounds they get in. They're not able to adjust to that, and that's why you're still going to see just 1, 2, 3, 4 under winning U.S. Opens, where you're seeing 11 under winning the Masters on a very lengthy, tough golf course. But 11 under is still, you know, that's a good score right now. And, you know, if Immelman, you know, goes one or two more under, 12, 13 under is going to end up winning this tournament. So I agree with you, Russ. The Masters has gotten a lot tougher. It's not as tough as a U.S. Open, primarily, in my opinion, because you play the Masters every year, and these guys will figure out a way to adjust it, to adjust to that on Augusta National, whereas going to these other courses, even like Torrey Pines, if they play play it as a regular tour stop, it's completely different when they play it as a U.S. Open venue. And I think just by that means alone, it's much tougher to adjust to rough and green speed and narrowing of fairways like the USGA does for the U.S. Open. Ah, Colin.
Yeah,
excellent.
Well, Pat, you bring up a good point. Obviously, it was kind of a related topic, but a little bit different than the discussion we're talking about regarding which is tougher, Masters or U.S. Open. But the idea that the Masters is always played at the same venue, the only major of the four that does that, to me, it means a couple of things. First of all, I think that adds to tradition and prestige because you're coming back to the same venue every year. It's special that way. You know, every 5 or 6 years, you come back to Wingfoot or to Oakmont or to Marion or, you know, any one of the number of prestigious clubs around the country. I think that it adds to prestige because it's the same venue each year, and that adds to tradition. But at the the flip of the coin there, at the same time, there is some more familiarity with the venue for the players, and I think that helps the players that play here best because it widens the distance between the guys that play here well and the guys that struggle here for two reasons. First of all, guys that play here well, like Tiger and in the past, guys like Jack and Arnold, they come back every year, so they just keep getting better at a place that they already play well. It just gives them such an advantage, I think. That's why I think that the Masters is not the major that is the most complete test, because I think it does favor certain types of players. Obviously, guys that are great putters, great short game, and long bomber-type hitters. But the other facet of that is, not only does it help the guys that it fits their game, help them win this tournament more each successive year, I think it hurts the guys a lot that struggle here, especially early on. Jeff Ogilvie, I had some comments from Jeff Ogilvie last week, Pat, that you missed. You were out of town. He made a comment last week that for the guys that play here early on in their careers and struggle, it's almost like they're jaded for the rest of their careers because they've got demons here that scar them early on that they'll never get rid of, because it's not like the Masters is going somewhere else next year. You know, from Phil Mickelson at Wingfoot in 06, yeah, he's got that horrible memory of hitting a banana slice on the 18th hole into the vendor's tents. But at least in 07, he was able to go to Oakmont in Pittsburgh where he missed the cut again. But the point is, you know, demons here at Augusta linger year after year.
Well, you know, you're exactly right about that, Russ. But that to me, though, and now I'm going to argue for the Masters and why I think it is a great major, because like the French Open in tennis, and you're Roger Federer, and you don't have that on your resume, you got the truly, truly great players, the guys we're going to put on the Mount Rushmore of great players in golf or tennis or whatever, you got to figure out a way to win at Augusta. It's not a tricked-up putt-putt course. It's a legitimate, great golf course, always in the top 10, top 5 in the country by everybody's rankings. So it's not some tricked-up goofy golf. Goofy golf is, I'm choking. But, you know, the great, great players, that's why, I don't have much sympathy for Lee Trevino or Tom Weisskopf or guys that were not able to win here, because if they were going to truly separate themselves from good players to really great players, you got to find a way, working the game you got, to get it around Augusta and beat these other guys. So I'm going to agree with you, I think, Russ, that Augusta is special in a way, and the people that couldn't find a way to win here, I don't want to hear the excuses from them. Just like if Federer's not able to win the French Open, that to me precludes him from being in that top echelon of unbelievable superstars because he couldn't figure out a way to win on clay. So figure out a way, Lee Trevino or Tom Weisskopf or Johnny Miller, to adjust your game to get to the point where you can win at Augusta, and then you're considered into the pantheon of the great players of all time.
I agree with you, Pat, on that one. I know we're way over the time here, but just one last thought before we move on to the next topic. I know Colin, he sounded the sounder about 5 minutes ago, but just one last thought on that. It is related to that, and that is the idea that obviously we're not going to say the only five players that have ever won the career Grand Slam are the greatest five players of all time, because that would be precluding some great players like Byron Nelson and Sam Snead.
Arnold.
Well, Arnold, yeah, great. Arnold wasn't in that group as well. I mean, it's only the five guys: Jack Nicklaus, Tiger Woods, Gary Player, Gene Sarazen, and Ben Hogan. We could make an argument that those are the five greatest players of all time, but I don't necessarily think that we're going to try to do that, because we realize there were some guys that didn't win one of the four majors that were great players. Now, I hate to say it, but in my opinion, the one major that most guys did not win that are the greatest of all time are guys like Arnold Palmer and Tom Watson, who never won a PGA championship. That's not to say that the PGA, well, it might be in no, you know, reading between the lines that the PGA Championship is the least important of the four majors, but I tend to think of the greatest players of all times that only had three of the four majors checked off. Most of them didn't have the PGA Championship. Now, for, you know, way back in time, Arnold Palmer, when he first started playing it, it was a match play event, so it was a lot tougher to win than a 72-hole stroke play event. So that's a little wrinkle that added to the difficulty of winning the PGA way back in the 40s and 50s and 60s. But, you know, this is a stat that I think tells a lot, because I think top to bottom, the list of Masters champions through the 72 years is the greatest list of champions of any of the four majors. And the world ranks of major champions over the last 20 years, just a sample size of the last 20 years, and I think you can extrapolate this out all the way down to the 30s and the last 60, 70 years and find the same pattern. Inside the top 10, over the last 20 years, 15 of the last 20 Masters champions were inside the top 10 in the world rankings. And the highest of all of them over the last 20 years was only 56, which was Zach Johnson last year. Now, you compare that to the other three majors, and it compares very favorably. The British was next on the list of 11 of the last 20 British Open champions being inside the top 10. U.S. Open, only nine of the last 20. And then PGA Championship, you know, bringing up the rear at only eight. But the world ranks, you know, the anomaly, I think, is what's so telling. For Zach Johnson, the anomaly is the Masters anomaly is Zach Johnson at 56 world ranking. How about the highest ranking for the other three majors? 99 was Steve Jones for the U.S. Open. So the highest ranking of any champion over the last 20 years was 99th for the U.S. Open at Steve Jones. Then you take a look at the PGA and the British. Sean McKeel was 169th in the world rankings when he won. And Ben Curtis, when he won the British, was 398th. So I think that those numbers, you can make numbers, you know, say basically anything that you want, but I think those numbers tell the tale that pound for pound, all the Masters champions from start to finish are the greatest collection, in my opinion, of any of the four majors.
I'm not going to disagree with that, although I will say that you know, the Masters field is a lot smaller than those other fields. It's notoriously just the best players playing at that time that play in it, so you're not going to have a wild card really like a Steve Jones that's going to come from nowhere, or a Ken Venturi like he did in 64, you know, to win the U.S. Open. You're not going to have that in the Masters because it's such an elite field.
But they don't get in the field.
Right.
Yeah. I think that's a great point.
But what you're
saying
is true. You know, these are the best players. I think what we're saying, Russ, is you mentioned the five guys that have the five, that have all four Grand Slam titles. I think what you're saying is they might not be the greatest players of all time, but if you want to get in that argument, in my opinion, you have to have won at least once on all four of those major levels. So that's what I think you're saying.
I think Jack and Tiger are definitely the two greatest of all time.
Right.
And I think, you know, obviously Gary Player, Sarazen, and Ben Hogan are definitely in the top six or seven if they're not in the top five. Russ Evans, Pat Rooney Jr. with you in a very extended edition of PGA National Resort and Spa Inside the Rope segment. Pat, I'm making up for the time that I was on a cell phone. I now have a headphone back. I'm back connected on the hotline. So I'm making up for the time that I was talking into my dinky Nokia.
And the thing I was going to say, Russ, is much like the Masters, we're brought to you by Limited Commercial Interruption today. If you've noticed, we're just going right through breaks like nothing.
Very good point. As I get the word break in my headset from Colin Holder, it is your PGA National Resort and Spa Inside the Rope segment, as we do each and every week here on Golf Exchange, presented by the Honda Classic, discussing a handful of hot topics in the world of golf. It's brought to you by PGA National Resort and Spa. What do Nicklaus, Palmer, Hagen, and Sarazen have in common? Find out when you play championship golf at PGA National Resort and Spa. Visit PGAResort.com.